Hey listeners, mark your calendars for Thursday, April 18th for a night of creativity for a good cause. This is an invitation to anyone to use their creativity and healing energy to help Nick Mundy, a life and wellness coach and founder of Mundy Mindset. Nick is currently battling cancer for a third time with specialized treatment he's receiving in Arizona, away from his wife and three sons. Whitney Ellison has answered the call and will be offering a night of poetic whimsy and storytelling at the gorgeous Center for Mind, Body, and Play on Thursday, April 18th, where Shelby Mundy will join to share more of her family's story. Whitney will share poems, followed by open mic, where music, stand-up, and poems are welcome. To get your free tickets and an opportunity to donate, visit the link in the show notes. Welcome to What the Fit, a podcast about what it means to be fit, whatever the fuck that means. I'm your host, Christelle Rubio, and I'm helping to share the stories of cool people doing cool shit, from fitness trainers to wellness coaches, entrepreneurs, and entertainers. We'll hear the behind-the-scenes journey, all the different ways we can take care of ourselves, and of course, we'll answer and explore the big question of, what does being fit mean to you? My guest today is a self-proclaimed fitness maniac who has spent the last 20 years coaching, teaching, and mentoring. As a returning guest, he's on today to talk about his next endeavor in hopes of reaching and helping others improve their lives. He believes happiness is built on mental, physical, and emotional health. Being a preppy caveman is about finding it through honoring the primal needs of all humans in a way that still allows us to navigate the unique social and environmental demands of modern life. Please welcome Patrick Herringer.
Thanks.
Hello.
Hello.
Welcome back.
Thank you. It's been a minute.
It's been a minute. You were first on in 2019. That's been a long time. Mm-hmm. And then back a couple times in between. I don't know how many times for sure fully you've been on. Maybe like three or four.
I think this is at least four. I was in the studio twice.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Then this is fourth.
Yeah.
Because we did a divorce episode in 2021 where you shared your experience with divorce, which was really valuable and helpful for me
as I
was
going through
my divorce. Yes, go back and check that one out. And I think you, along with your wife, are amongst the smartest and strongest people that I know.
Well, thank you.
So I am always ready to listen to whatever you have to say.
Wow, that's a lot of pressure to start out with.
No,
I appreciate you saying that.
It's not a lot of pressure at all.
And Sarah is great, yes.
Yeah,
I listen to my
amazing.
Wife quite a bit, too.
She's the best. So I'm hoping, since it's been a while, since 2019, I think it would be most helpful for you to recount your story, your origin story, all the transitions that have led you to where you are today. A reminder for me, too, because I was looking at your Substack, which I think we'll get into.
Yeah.
And it's like wartime, Hollywood, like Wall Street. Like,
it's kind of a wild resume, isn't it?
It's a wild resume. So let's hear it.
Yeah. So I guess we'll just kind of start back and get our way here.
Yeah.
Grew up around this area most of my life, or lived here at least till I was 20, school, and then after college, ended up in the Army and was there for almost 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
A couple of deployments, 9 states in between, and, had a great career in the Army.
What were you doing in the Army?
A lot of different things.
Yeah.
So, started out as an enlisted intelligence analyst. Went back to school, commissioned, became an air defense officer.
Okay. I don't know what any of those things
are. Yeah, they're military's tons of acronyms. So I dealt with military intelligence for a while.
Okay.
Assessing threats, things
okay.
like that.
Okay. That sounds then, exciting.
Yeah. And it at the time I really wanted the security clearance. So that was kind
what
of the
what does a security clearance get you?
If you have a top secret security clearance post-military, there are a lot of jobs that open up to you.
Oh, yeah.
And at least 1% of that is also wanting to be able to sit there later in life and being like, yeah, at one time I held a top secret security clearance.
Do you like get access to like the aliens and stuff like that?
It's all super compartmentalized. So you basically get
access. There's not like a golden ticket.
There is.
The president has it.
Yeah. I was certainly not, okay, not okay. quite I just at wanna, that level. Yeah, okay. But yeah, so we started out there. I came back here, finished college at University of Cincinnati and did ROTC there. Went on active duty as an officer. And for almost 7 years was on active duty. And I did everything from, like I said, I was an air defense officer by trade, which is dealing with shooting and shooting down missiles.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Wasn't really Casual. My favorite thing. Yeah, I did a mission in Iraq where we were trying to intercept mortars and rockets while they were coming into bases. That was a kind of an exciting year
I would say that
spent there. And then transitioned later in my career to had done a lot of advising for local forces in Afghanistan. I was out of Fort Carson for a while with 4th Infantry Division and was basically trying to train and prepare Afghan government and military forces to stand on their own so that we could leave. So my deployment to Afghanistan was essentially a small 10-12 man team, and we worked with a lot of local forces, some uniform, some non-uniform forces, and local governments and things like that.
So is this kind of like where the teaching started?
Yeah, it's just kind of always been a thing.
A thread woven throughout.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's been something that I've kind of always been drawn to. Mm. And when I decided to get out of the Army, you know, like I think I was, let's see, how old was I? 30, I don't know, 33, 34 at the time.
Oh, yeah. That's a long career in the Army, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was kind of at that point where if you're at 10 years, you got to decide if you're going to stay, if you're going to go. And to be quite frank, I was just about out of the ability to continue to do what other people told me all the time.
Mm.
And so it was like, hey, the Army was great for me. I needed it more than it needed me in the beginning. And I learned a lot and had a lot of good experiences with it. But it was just time for me to move on.
Yeah.
And I kind of made the decision coming right out of the Army that I thought, I'm going to chase money and see where that takes me. I've never done that before. I didn't exactly grow up a dirt poor kid, but we certainly was not like I wanted to have some more. And so I got out of the Army and I took a job with Ernst & Young, as a financial consultant in Manhattan. And Sarah, that's when Sarah and I had kind of first started getting serious, and she moved to Manhattan with me. And I spent a year at Ernst & Young working on Wall Street, doing a lot of exciting things like international tax regulation and,
chasing that dollar bill.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was a couple of months into that that I realized I couldn't do it.
Why couldn't you do it?
I could not pretend
that
I was interested in it.
That
I was interested in it.
You?
That I cared about it. Mm. And to be honest, I'm kind of a philosophical opposition to the U.S. banking industry. I think it's done a lot of harm for a lot of people.
So you're saying like your values didn't
align? Right. My values. Sarah asked me the other day where. What did she ask me? Where I find my self-worth.
Oh,
and
that's an interesting question.
We boiled it down to living by my values.
That's good.
A lot of that on the heels of some stuff we'll get into later about, internal and external locus of control, all of that stuff. But the year in New York was a good experience. I needed to get out of there. I was 9 months back from a deployment at that point and still a little bit on edge from all that. And the hustle and bustle of the city, if you will, was just more than I really wanted to deal with. And I had no emotional ties to the job.
Yeah.
And I'm not a person who can do that.
Yeah.
Sarah and I decided to open a gym. And after
came back to Cincinnati.
Yeah. We initially decided to try to do it in New Jersey. We were going to do it in a suburb of New York and realized that if we were going to throw down roots and all of that, we didn't want to do it in a town where we didn't know anyone. So moved back to Cincinnati in late 2014.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so almost 10 years ago now.
Okay.
Started the gym. It was, at our first downtown location for about 6.5 years. And we were a CrossFit affiliate for years.
Yeah. When I met you, it was CrossFit.
Yeah. And we have since de-affiliated with them and I think become a much more mature facility, if you will. We changed locations.
Yeah.
Changed philosophies. And I don't want it to come off as I'm shit-talking CrossFit. I'm a person who was a disciple for a long time.
Right.
It was, like I said, I made a business of it. But
we
just eventually got to the point where we wanted to be in control of our own product.
Yeah.
Not be kind of pigeonholed into
doing beholden to like a certain, certain set of rules. Yeah, that makes sense.
And so we, you know, we upgraded kind of what we did at the gym as far as the services we provided, a lot more personal training, a lot more individualized programming, things like that. And just kind of grew up a little bit.
Yeah, it makes sense. Especially in the field of health and wellness, you would think you want your coaches, your practitioners to always be learning more. What's next?
Yeah.
And so it's like you evolved out of that. You kept learning, you kept having different experiences, went a different way.
Yeah, well, yeah. And you touched on it. I have always been drawn to coaching.
Yeah.
And teaching and mentoring for as long as I can remember. And when the pandemic hit in 2020, we got closed down like everybody else. We unfortunately had to close Sarah's studio. She had her studio at the time and it didn't survive the pandemic.
I remember it was so special. It was such a great
place. Yeah, the original method was an outstanding place.
I met you guys.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we basically decided that something had to change. The business model itself, like we were succeeding at that model, but the ceiling was super low. And so if we're going to espouse coaching, then we need to follow those tenets. So we hired a business coach, changed what we do, changed a lot of our philosophies, and just kind of tried to do what they told us. And it's been an outstanding thing for us, both from a business perspective, but also from the product that we're doing. So, hey, if you're in Cincinnati and you want to come check out Findlay Movement,
that's right.
You know where
come
to find
check
us,
them out.
Right by Findlay Market. Yeah.
Yeah.
So go ahead.
How do you describe like the gym philosophy now, since it's no longer affiliated with CrossFit, what can people expect if they do want to come check
it out? Yeah, so we are a functional strength and conditioning program. So a lot of the same movements that you see in a lot of gyms, squats, push, pull, all of those things. Yep. But we have multiple programming tracks. We have a track for people who really want to perform and do all of the high, hard, cool things.
Yeah.
We've got another track that is essentially just as good from a fitness perspective, but doesn't contain all of the high technical stuff because that stuff's just not necessary.
Needs it. Yeah,
not everyone needs it. Not everyone cares about it, but they still want to get a good workout.
Right.
And we added a third track of a refresh programming every day that's basically a feel better leaving than when you came in. It's an active recovery, and it kind of gives people permission on that day. Hey, I've only got 3 days to go to the gym this week, but I'm kind of trashed. I didn't sleep well. Work's been kicking my ass, so I want to be able to go in. And we have an option for people to just come in, breathe, move, stretch, and leave feeling better.
That's nice. I really think that's kind of the future of fitness, too, that more gyms, studios are incorporating these like rest and recovery type of workouts.
Yeah, I guess my business coach would probably be upset with me if I didn't mention. We drastically changed our intro process too.
Mm.
So whereas our, you know, the old CrossFit model kind of threw you to the wolves, you showed up and you were in class. We have a really extensive intro process where we teach and coach and educate the client. It's weeks usually of personal training before they get into class. But along that time, they're learning stuff. They're getting fitter. They're meeting people. They're meeting coaches. And all along the way, you're getting prepared for class.
Yeah.
So that when you finally get into class, hey, you're ready to go.
You're ready
to go.
You
know people.
You don't
have
to feel intimidated.
Exactly.
You're like,
It's an adult house of fitness, you know?
Yeah. An adult house of fitness. I love that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's what we've been doing for the last almost, I guess about 9 years now is running the gym. It has matured to a place now where we have full-time coaches and just recently has allowed Sarah and I to kind of start pursuing some other things. And lo and behold, here we find ourselves.
Here we find ourselves.
Because of, I guess, those other things.
Yeah. So what's the big other thing?
You mentioned it in the intro, I think. You were reading some of the bio from my Substack.
Yes, I was.
The Preppy Caveman brand.
Preppy Caveman brand. I love the branding.
Thank you. Yeah. It's
very catchy, very cute. I get it. Like I get the vision. A preppy caveman.
Yeah. So you kind of read part of that, and it's really, you know, there's some connotations behind both of those words.
Mm-hmm.
You know, preppy, especially when I was a kid, was kind of a negative connotation.
Oh, really?
And there's
for me it was like that was like the cool style.
Well,
like when
in rural Kentucky. Not so much.
Say no more.
Yeah.
Say no more.
Yeah. So the preppy side of it being that. And then caveman, there's been an enormous move in the last several years towards like primalizing your life, if you will.
And I think the Primal Blueprint book is over there.
And I love that stuff.
Yeah.
But it's just not reasonable for most people. Like
yes.
I'm not another person who's going to tell you to go live off grid. And
I love
sun
that
your
idea.
Balls.
Amazing. Like
and just do all
be
of this.
Barefoot all the time. drink raw milk. Like,
yeah, that stuff's great. And sure, it's just not going to work for most people. No. If you have the ability and you have the time to do that with your life, then more power to you. Yeah. It is absolutely a great way to be healthy, mm-hmm, and have mental clarity, et cetera.
Yep.
But for most of us, we have to participate in this whole big life thing. Mm-hmm. You've got jobs, you've got friends, and trying to find the balance between honoring the things that everybody needs. Like, you, your human animal has things that it needs. It needs security, mm-hmm, it needs nutrition, et cetera. We need all these things, yep, but also getting those are a little tough now because we have social obligations, we have, yeah, work obligations, all of these things. There's now that make those
dopamine
so difficult.
Addictions around every corner.
Every corner, yep. You
can't, no one is safe.
Yeah, and so the preppy caveman moniker, if you will, is essentially trying to find a balance between, like I said, honoring these things that,
yeah,
every,
kind of like getting
human,
back to the root of being human.
Yes.
How we yeah, take care of ourselves in this like modern world.
Yep. But doing, yeah, it in a way that allows me to participate.
Yeah. 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 Because it's one thing to say, of course, I know what I should do, right? I should be in bed with no screens by 9 p.m. Mm-hmm. I should wake up when the sun comes out. I should get my morning sunlight. I should get my water. I shouldn't, yep, have caffeine until after breakfast or a caffeine at all if I'm a menstruating woman. I should, you know, here's my macros and my protein and my carbs and whatever. And I know my 3 days, I know what to do. Right?
All of that gave me anxiety.
Like, right? Like, I know I should journal. I should meditate. Like, all of these things I know are going to contribute. But then that would really separate me from a lot of my social circle, right. Like, sorry, I can't see you. I can't hang out. I have to.
Yeah, and then
be
you and then
bed.
You have created a position where your mental health is suffering for
right,
those reasons.
Then I'm a robot.
Yep,
I'm a wellness robot.
So that's kind of the thought process behind the brand of Preppy Caveman. It's just making sure we're touching both of those things.
Yeah, I love. But so when you say brand, what does that mean?
Yeah,
what does it encapsulate? Encapsulate.
What I'm trying to do with it is really just reach more people. Mm. I am absolutely passionate about teaching and coaching. I love it. I don't imagine there's going to be a time in my life where I'm not doing it. Mm-hmm. And this has allowed me to expand and to hopefully reach more people and do it in a way that is not solely fitness. Mm. I love fitness. Mm-hmm. It's what pays my mortgage.
Yep.
But if I'm honest, there are a lot of other things out there.
You're talking like physical fitness, right?
Yeah,
like
yeah,
movement,
yeah, yes, exactly.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
Exercise is an enormous part of it. Exercise, yeah, and nutrition are a part of this kind of this whole movement thing that I'm doing.
Yeah, we need it for our meat suit.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Meat vehicle suit, yeah, all the things. But I wanted to be able to expand beyond that. Mm-hmm. And as a person who has struggled with mental health as much as everybody else and confidence, all of these things, I, yeah, realized that you have to attack this problem from many different sides. Mm-hmm. And so I felt like this was a great opportunity for me to be able to reach people on aspects more than just lifting weights,
like,
and getting fit.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. So I think it looks like the Substack, right?
Yep.
You're writing.
Mm-hmm. A podcast.
A podcast.
Yeah, that is somewhat related to it that we're going to do. It's going to be called Different Animals.
Okay, yeah.
With the goal being of exposing and telling the stories of people who I know who are
animals.
Fascinating.
Yeah.
Yeah, and who have just done...
Freaks.
Yep. Yeah. Have done a lot of things in their life or had experiences that are atypical and just trying to get their stories out there.
Yeah, cool. Yeah. Love it. So do we know when the podcast is coming?
I'm hoping to start recording before summer.
Okay.
I've got a couple of guests lined up now. It's just a matter of logistically.
Yeah.
The job with the gym, mm-hmm, oddly enough, with the amount of people that come and go across the city, has really allowed us to meet some very fascinating people with some unbelievable stories.
I'm sure, yeah. You get to meet tons of people who are obviously committed to their health and well-being and, you know, have the prioritization, right, of those resources to say, hey, I'm going to come to,
yeah,
get a coach. So, yeah, I would imagine you meet a lot of cool people. Yeah.
It's fascinating. Yep.
So, okay, so the Substack is writing. Is like...
Correct.
You're like your diary.
Yes.
It's Patrick's diary.
Correct. So... The two main pursuits on Substack will be kind of two different kinds of writing. I wanna write with some technical knowledge and some information sharing that I know is beneficial. I think you and I, before we started, talked about the discipline article.
Yes. Yeah. I wanted to talk about that one.
Yeah.
Let's talk about it.
Great.
What's the title of the article? I think it's Discipline, Why People Are Getting It Wrong.
On Discipline. I'm glad I took that time.
On Discipline.
On Discipline.
Yeah. Why People Are Getting It Wrong.
Yes.
Something like that.
So yeah, the premise of the article being, I think discipline has been largely fetishized.
For sure. And I am guilty of it.
Yeah. It feels like we've got some discipline influencers out there. I think I used a term in the article, discipline porn.
Yeah.
To describe people like Jocko Willink.
Yep.
And David Goggins.
Yes.
And these people who are...
Rise and grind every day, even if you're bleeding out, don't stop. Yes.
And this is not an attack on them. I have respect for those guys.
Oh my, but yes.
The idea that that is a sustainable lifestyle for people is
not everyone is
just
them. They're like the Michael
no
Jordans of,
yes,
yeah,
exactly.
of their life, you know, whatever. Like it's not accessible to everyone.
It's not. And we have kind of been told that discipline is a thing you just need to do, that you have and you should use. And my experience is someone who's done quite a few things in life that people would typically consider require a ton of discipline.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really see it that way. I see it as if there is something that you want to pursue that is hard, there's probably a couple of week period where you're going to have to grind a little bit to get in the routine of doing it.
Yeah.
But once you start to get into that thing, if you're seeing progress, that is the scaffolding that is going to hold you there. Basically create a scenario where discipline's not needed. Because mm-hmm. if you continue to need discipline, I would argue that either number one, you don't actually want the thing that you're pursuing,
mm-hmm.
or two, you need to educate yourself more mm-hmm. because you haven't quite found whatever tidbit, whatever piece that is that
right.
makes it click into place for you, that it's like, oh, okay, this yep. is good for me. I see what it's doing. And that in and of itself allows me to continue doing the thing.
Yeah. You talked earlier about where you find your worth, right?
Yeah.
And for a while, I really found my worth in my discipline. Like, I would be so proud when people would be like, oh, my God, you're such a... Like, you're one of the most disciplined people I know.
And you're like, oh, no, I'm not. But
no,
yes,
I'm like,
but
yeah,
secretly,
fuck,
yeah.
Fuck yeah, I am. Because I, like, made that, like, my Everest kind of thing. And I would create... challenges for myself, like purely out of the like, let me just like.
Did you do it as a kid?
Yeah, for sure.
100%.
Like just like create, like, you know.
I've got to do this thing 7 out of 10 times right, or I won't move on. Just
yes.
random
just,
little tests.
Yeah, just like mm-hmm. yes, tests. Just like okay, you like let's do this. Like you know, you're gonna read every single day for this month, or you're gonna I don't know what it was. Stupid shit when I was little, mostly probably around like sports or.
And so I would probably argue then that you actually are good at discipline.
No, I think I am. Yeah.
But I don't think many people are. And that's not an attack on
yeah.
people. This is a thing that you have worked on, thought of, maybe even obsessed over like me your entire life.
Right. But I think it was this obsession to your point because it was like, that's how I'm going to be worthy
yeah.
if I stick to it, if
yep.
I achieve it. And for me, achieving was like, okay, then you're just like not going to give up. You're just going to do whatever it takes, no matter how painful it is, no matter how long it is. And then once that kind of let that, I don't know, the shyness of that wore off, or it was like, okay, yes, you are a disciplined person. Then it was like, okay, well, maybe I
now
should
what?
Jump rope for 10 minutes every day in the month of June. Maybe I should do a yoga challenge and see how many months I can do yoga every single, you know, then it was just mm-hmm. like, let me just see.
And
let
those
me just like create
just
these
keep
things.
Escalating.
Let me not drink caffeine for a whole month. Let
yep.
me cut. Let me only drink water for a whole month.
Mm-hmm.
Let me only eat meat. I did the carnivore diet.
Yeah,
for
I did that
month.
For 5 months.
It was really hard for me.
Was it?
Oh my gosh! Yeah, my body did not like it. And now what I know is too, especially about like a woman's cycle
mm-hmm.
and like the need for different
sure.
nourishment at different, I can see now, I like that probably was not.
So that's
like,
kind
the
of the point.
For me, yeah.
Yeah, that's kind of the point is that these extreme ideas, these I have to lock myself down, are also creating tons of opportunity for failure.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at something as I've got to be an absolute discipline monster, and I want to do this thing for 100 days in a row. Yeah. Otherwise, I'm a failure.
Right.
And let's say you do it for 75 days, and then you miss a day.
Mm-hmm.
If your whole system is set up that discipline is the only thing that matters, the 75 days that you did prior to that were absolutely worthless.
Right. And that,
and if you go on the next 24 days and you do 99 days out of 100, if your goal is pure discipline, it's hard to find a success in that.
Yeah.
But in, we can take a step back and realize, hey, you did 99 out of 100 days.
Like, for sure.
On what scale is that not great?
Yeah. Yeah. It's at least for me, and I've moved through that, I think, for sure. It was just like the rigidness,
mm-hmm.
right? This like, I have to, you know, do this prescribed way and this type of thing.
Self-applied and, pressure?
Yeah. Oh, completely self-applied. Like no one was telling me to do this shit. Like it was all me. And now I just feel like I have such a, like a looser grip on it where it's like, you know, by now I feel like I've built more trust in myself
mm-hmm.
because I think the discipline too came from this fear of like, okay, if I let it go for a little bit, it'll be gone. You know, if I don't work out for more than, you know, 5 days, I'll lose all my fitness. So I've got to stay with it. And now I have some more trust and compassion with myself that says, no, this will come in flux. I'm committed to fitness for my life. That's never going to change. Mm-hmm. There may be periods, there may be seasons where, you know, I'm more in it or more committed or more available to it than others, but it's not now this, like, I have to, like you said, like I have to have this discipline to do it. No, that's just my life.
I get it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think for people, I mean, that's a lot where people are trying to start health journeys or restart health journeys or incorporate new habits.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's really common that they jump to this extreme. Okay, I'm going to do it this way perfectly or else
mm-hmm.
I'll wait another 3 months and I'll try to do it perfectly again.
Yes. And you're starting and stopping over and over again. I think one of another point, as I was kind of looking into some research for writing the article, a point that is often missed by people is that discipline is very siloed. And so even if you see that person you work with or a family member or whoever, a friend who's got this area of their life that they are just locked down and you're like so envious or jealous or, you know, look at them in admiration. And then if you get into it with them, you realize this is one aspect of their life and discipline does not carry over.
Yes.
It can be a trait that you're good at, I believe.
Right.
But I know for myself, I've done some unbelievably disciplined things in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And I can confidently sit here and say that.
Yeah.
But I can also tell you that while those were going on,
yep.
I had some unbelievably undisciplined behaviors running in the background.
For sure. And you know what? And then you're saying that, it's just spurring some thought for me. I wonder if it's like, it feels like discipline too is almost like this, it's not an infinite resource, right? Like it
Absolutely
takes attention and time and energy. And so if you're putting so much into this one like discipline stuff, of course then other things are going to lose that you know, you're not going to be able to put your attention to them. So it's still in this like extreme way where like one area of life, looks good, everything's in line.
Mm-hmm.
And then behind the scenes, probably the place that you don't show people.
That is the conversation I have with a ton of our clients, is that this is a long run game and you're going to be up, you're going to be down. You're not always going to be
being
the
well
fittest, healthiest
life.
You've ever been. Yeah.
Yeah.
But it can't be because you're white knuckling it.
Yeah.
It just can't.
Yeah. And that's just a story of life too.
Absolutely.
Like just,
and how many people, you know, that are trying to change something or, you know, like let's just pick an easy one. Somebody's diet. They're trying to change their nutrition. I don't think you can track your way or, you know, social media post your way into enjoying restriction and enjoying holding yourself back from things you want.
Mm-hmm.
So the only way I see for this to work is for, like I said before, for you to either A, recognize that that's not a thing you actually care that much about. You might like to think that you want it, but maybe you don't.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you're like, no, I fucking want the thing, well, then you need to read more. You need to learn more. You need to find whatever piece of information, whatever proper context that allows you to see, yep, this is a good thing for me.
Yeah.
And I would just say that if you're still struggling to do those things, you know, those are the routes you need to look into. Yeah. Do I actually want this? And if I do.
Yeah. And I think it's adjusting the expectation.
Yeah.
People think that, okay, if I am disciplined for 30 mm-hmm. days, for 60 days, mm-hmm. for 90 days, I'm going to get what I want. When in reality, depending on the kind of change you're trying to make, the kind of result you're looking for, it's going to take a much longer time of sustained, consistent effort versus 3 months of intensity.
Yeah, and that's also the type of process that allows you to build confidence in yourself. Is you realize, oh, I don't have to tie myself into these knots and paint myself into a corner to say, I'm not going to do this. I'm mm-hmm. not going to do this, or I'm going to do this every single day. And when you can find that comfort with it and just make those changes gradually, give yourself some grace and realize it's not a linear path. Like, there are going to be deviations, but the key thing is just to not quit.
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
And that's the not discipline.
Right.
Fair. Yeah. That I think we're on the same page there.
Yeah. Yeah. If there's any kind of like, there's a different word for it though. It's not discipline. I think it's just like commitment.
Yeah. I like that.
Yeah. Commitment seems more wholesome than discipline. It seems like a friendlier word. But I think what we're getting to as well, this whole conversation around discipline and bringing in like the compassion, right? The kind of ease, the loosening of the grip, the loosening of control around certain behaviors or thought patterns really will come from the relationship you have with yourself.
Yeah.
And how you feel about yourself.
Here we go.
Yeah. And you talked to me about this when we met for a drink not too long ago, your experience and the article you wrote that's titled, Fuck, You're Allowed to Like Yourself.
Yeah.
And I think that this is probably, one of the more powerful conversations that we can have, because I think that, unfortunately, so many people struggle with it. Like, I'm going to say everyone.
I don't think that's crazy.
at least have struggled with it at one point in their life.
Yes. And the title of it, Fuck, You're Allowed to Like
Yourself. You're allowed to like yourself.
Is a wild statement. And it's an absolute verbatim quote from me.
Yeah.
I think the article starts out, there I sat, tears streaming down my face, under 30 pounds of weighted blanket and 3 grams of psilocybin.
Yep.
And that was the realization.
Yeah.
Fuck.
Yeah.
You're allowed to like yourself.
You're allowed.
Like, all of this time, almost 45 years on this planet, and it never once occurred to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not writing this series to be a sympathetic figure,
mm-hmm.
Because I'm not. Mm-hmm. I had a somewhat typical childhood. There are people who've been through way worse than me, who had worse home experiences. But I think that's the point, is that I was a pretty normal kid and had some traumatic things go through, some school shit and whatever, but everyone does.
Yeah. Yeah, everyone does.
But those defined nearly everything I did.
Right.
For most of my adult life.
Yep.
The first part, and you know, I would love for you guys to go check it out and read it if you could.
Yeah,
if you want to subscribe and check it out. But the first part is essentially kind of rehashing some elementary school shit. And I remember being 6 years old on the playground and being made fun of for how I ran.
Mm.
And
people hear, you know, other stories and they're like, oh, abusive childhood, that makes sense. What? No, it could be literally someone bullied you for how you ran.
Yeah.
And that flips a switch in you and you start thinking, okay, I have to start thinking of myself this way, or I need to start acting this way to avoid anyone telling me that I'm a goofy runner ever again.
Right. You know, it was like a couple of things. There was, I'll be 45 in less than a month. Mm-hmm. So we're talking about the mid 1980s when I was in elementary school, and I'm a slow reader. And apparently in the 1980s, when you're a slow reader, they think you're a special kid is what they called it.
Yeah. Special kid.
Special. So you went to special reading.
Mm.
And so there you sit in first grade, special reading teacher comes to class, opens the door, and they say, all right, where are my readers? And you and the 2 or 3 other people in class get paraded out and you walk while
everyone's watching you. Everyone knows what's going on.
Yeah,
you know what's going on.
You know exactly what's going on.
Yeah.
And so then like Tuesday and Thursdays becomes fucking traumatic because you're like, all right, we got to do this again. And so you form an opinion of yourself. Yeah. Like, oh, I'm not smart.
Yeah.
Got it.
Right. So if I'm not smart, what can I be?
And I wasn't physically big enough and I wasn't fast enough.
Okay. Take those off the table.
Yeah. And so that was kind of part one.
Yeah.
You know, part two, I just released about 3 hours ago.
Yeah.
About 3 hours ago. And it's just a continuation of that. So we had, you know, those major issues of I don't feel like I can compete physically. I'm not very smart because I'm a slow reader, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And then when you get to middle school, there is an event that happens where I get humiliated in a hallway where I'm about to get beat up and it doesn't happen, blah, blah, blah. You got to read the story if you want the whole thing.
Right.
But
teaser.
The combination here of believing that that's how you handle hard situations by being a coward.
Mm.
You can't physically compete. You're not very smart.
Mm-hmm. Which isn't just so funny to think about your little self saying that and then look at you now.
It's kind of wild.
Yeah.
And then, a funny anecdote in there about the first time I went to a makeout party.
Oh, a makeout party. Oh my God. I have not thought about makeout parties in so long, but of course they were there. Wish we had them now as adults, honestly.
Just a bunch of people go sit in a room.
Like single
people. You bring your wife or
yeah.
You
yeah.
Or just singles.
Yeah.
I like
I think just singles is safe. Safer.
That's fair. Yeah. That's fair. So it's like, This party leading up to it.
Is it in a basement? Is it in someone's basement?
It's absolutely in a basement. Yes. Of course it's in a basement.
Yes.
But leading up to it, the discussion at the cafeteria is, oh, this is going to be going down.
Right.
And the side of that I got was, because I was dating a seventh grader. I don't know how, but I was in sixth grade.
Okay.
Sorry. I guess that's the important context. Yes. So I was dating an older woman.
Okay. Yeah,
but the conversation at the lunch table was that I was going to be the one suggesting kid shit and I was going to be playing board games, blah, blah, blah. And so it was like this. Oh, of course you are. And so the party happens. I'm making out.
Of course.
It's
yeah.
And so then like the next week at school was this unbelievable feeling that I'd never had before because people knew.
Mm.
And like my friends at the table were actually in a position where we were like,
oh, dude, you're cool. Yeah, you made
out.
Yeah,
I was, because I was the one who made out.
Yeah.
And so clearly not aware of it as a sixth grader.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, the positive association between affection with a woman or a girl at the time, I was a kid.
Yeah.
And what that got me was all I needed.
Yeah.
And so, not to rehash, but I didn't feel smart. I wasn't big enough. And I was kind of a cute kid.
Yeah.
And so I just decided from that moment on, I was going to find all of my worth in my appearance and attention from women.
Yeah.
And anything basically outside of that, I was not going to take as anything that I could like about myself.
Mm-hmm.
And shit, that was, you know, so sixth grade, you're what, 12?
Yeah.
I don't know, the next 20 years.
Right.
Almost.
Right.
Of complete external locus of control.
Yeah.
Like no ability to find happiness in myself, just had to completely find it from someone else.
Right. And when you get it, that high is so fucking good.
Yeah.
It's great that you can just continue to chase it, even if you know, there's times when you're not getting it, you're like, no, I'll get it again.
Yeah.
I'll get it again. I have to get it again.
And I think that the real point is that this is not an atypical experience for people.
No, it's totally normal.
And I would be willing to bet that probably find that pretty wild as a story from me.
Yeah. No, for sure. But it also just kind of makes sense.
Yeah. You know, like if you could, there's an anecdote in there about when a thing happened and I was like shell-shocked from it and it completely made my doubt myself. And it's like, if I could take this person that I am now and go talk to that 12-year-old version of me and be like, look, man, it's fine.
Yeah.
Look who you became. You
right.
went to war. You,
yeah.
you know, were at one point one of the fittest dudes on the planet in their 40s.
Yeah.
And
well, now you can tell that part. That,
yeah.
Now you can tell that little part of you this.
Yeah. And so that's where the psilocybin came into play.
Yeah.
Is one of my best friends, we're not going to say his name.
Okay. Yeah.
One of my best friends is a psilocybin therapist, and we had the opportunity
Amazing.
To participate in a psilocybin therapy session with him.
So let's talk about that, yeah, because this is so interesting to me. I absolutely would like to participate in one sometime. And I think a lot of people, like everyone's talking about shrooms.
Yep.
Everyone has chocolate mushrooms,
yep,
mushroom gummies. Like, I don't know when it happened. All of a sudden, though.
Oh, they're ubiquitous. Like, all of a sudden, everybody's cool with shrooms.
All of a sudden, everyone's cool with shrooms, which is great. I've been, yep, cool with shrooms for a long time. Yep. I love them. But all of a sudden, it's this hot topic of conversation. Mm-hmm. And so it's also getting a lot of attention in, like, the medical community for, mm-hmm, its work with, like, PTSD and, like, trauma therapy. And Huberman had released that episode where it was, like, scientifically breaking. Yep. So, like, it's,
yeah,
there.
Yeah, MAPS
it's
has done a ton.
Yeah, like, it's, yeah, there are studies that have been done, research that has been done, replicated research that on the benefits of psilocybin as it relates to, like, navigating your mental space.
Yeah, so I've done an enormous amount of research on this,
yeah,
and also in talking with my friend. If you've taken psilocybin in the past and, you know, gone and sat in a dark room, put some blindfolds on, whatever, and just kind of tried to have the universe show you some stuff, mm-hmm, I think that's a worthwhile pursuit. And
I agree.
And I have done that on more than one occasion myself.
Yeah.
The practice of psilocybin therapy is drastically different than,
yeah,
that. I'm not sure how familiar you are, but just so listeners.
Yeah, just tell us.
It is essentially talk therapy, like, mm-hmm, any other therapy session. However, you're under the influence of psilocybin.
How do you take the psilocybin? How do they give it to you?
So we took it as a tea.
Okay.
You know, it's water soluble, so you boil it, and,
yep,
and we drank it as a tea. The point of why psilocybin therapy is so effective is, you know, we're all familiar with our ego. It protects us, prevents us from, you know, feeling things, etc.
Mm-hmm.
And psilocybin essentially takes your ego, like you and I are having a conversation right here,
mm-hmm,
and sets it off to the side and makes it watch. And so your ego is sitting over here, the thing that is hyperprotective and always is a hover parent for you and thinks, mm-hmm, you can't handle emotions,
mm-hmm,
is forced to sit there as you and a therapist have a conversation. And so all of these things that your ego typically protects you from is no longer there.
Mm. And I would imagine encourages some blind spots as well, the ego. Like,
yes,
it prevents,
absolutely,
you from,
yep,
being able to see.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so, you know, when I had that very complicated, you know, realization of, fuck, you're allowed to like yourself.
Yeah.
Psilocybin doesn't show you a ton of things that you don't already know. It,
yeah,
just actually allows you to see them for the first time. Like,
yeah,
I knew I didn't like myself.
Sure.
And I knew I was not a confident person. But that doesn't change anything. And,
mm-hmm,
it's like having that realization where I said it and it was like, man, I actually haven't ever.
Yeah.
And it's like, how many people are living life that way?
Yeah.
And just like, of course, yeah, I like myself and I know I'm not a bad person and I know I've done some okay things. It's not that.
No, it's not that.
It's actually, do you like yourself?
Mm-hmm.
Do you give your, not, and not even do you, but
like,
do you
away,
recognize that you are a person worth liking?
Yeah. And stripped away of the achievements,
yes,
of the ego stuff of like, what's behind the veneer? Cause maybe it's easy to be like, oh yes, I like what I've done. I like my house.
Mm-hmm.
I like my job. I like my family. I like my part, you know, I like this, mm-hmm, life that I created. But okay, let's take all that away then.
Yeah. And it's not, I'm not at all sitting here saying that I'm just this amazing person who whatever, but it's a fundamental, man, I don't want to use the word right, but it's a fundamental thing that people should understand how
it will
to like themselves.
Impact
in
every area, yeah, of your life.
It
every decision that you make,
so this,
every,
yeah, this was
action you take.
What, October of last year?
Mm-hmm.
And there were other things in the session. It's 3 hours long. You cover quite a bit of ground in three hours.
3 hours long.
Yeah.
And you're like kind of laying down, sitting
so,
down?
So yeah, I'm laying on a couch.
Laying on a couch.
Weighted blanket.
Okay.
Eye shades. I never, consciousness is not the right word. I was always coherent. And
where
always,
you're speaking.
I was always aware.
Yeah.
Do
you have visuals with your eyes closed?
I did not this time.
Okay.
Typically a little bit.
Okay.
But I'm not a huge visuals person.
Okay.
I've come to find out with.
Well, and I've just learned this too. They're like, of course, you know, different weed strains produce different effects. Different,
mm-hmm,
mushroom strains can produce different effects. So you can get a mushroom strain that,
yes,
doesn't produce a lot of visuals.
Yeah.
That's more. So, you know, if people are kind of, I would imagine just from like old school people, not old school people, but like the old school way of thought of like mushrooms. If you take mushrooms, you're going to go to the top of the roof and you're going to jump off and you're going to kill yourself. And you're going to see crazy shit and you're going to have flashbacks later.
Yep. I remember all of those things. I was part of the DARE program as a kid.
I won the DARE writing essay contest.
I didn't graduate.
In fifth grade. I actually came in second. That's a lie. I came in second. I came in second. I lost to Beth Walker. But anyway, I was, yeah,
Beth,
into DARE. But like, that's not really the experience. That's not, I mean, you could have that experience, yeah, but.
No, I think a lot of folks, if you're terrified of the idea of psilocybin, because I've talked about this with a lot of people, and the thing that I hear quite a bit is, oh, I don't think like, I could not be in control of myself. Yep.
That's the point.
It is 100% the fucking point.
When
that's
you're
the point.
You're in a safe environment.
That is your ego saying, nope.
We can't let you in
you
here.
You will not push me out of the way
because
then we're going to get into shit, and I don't want to do that.
Right.
And it's the only way.
Yeah. And it can be scary for sure.
It's not the only
it's not the only way. It's not the only way. Well, the only way I think is to like get through your ego, but there are different ways that you can
correct.
Do that.
Yeah. Correct.
Yeah. But I recently had an experience just yesterday, speaking of like timely
super recent
situation. So for the eclipse, me and my friend Tony were watching the eclipse, and we did a little bit of mushrooms, two small squares of like a chocolate bar each. So that like there's absolutely no visuals to that. There's really no distortion of reality at all. There's like kind of, you know, an upbeat euphoric feeling, a feeling of like more introspection. So, you know, we watched the eclipse, we kind of did our day, we went to eat. And we were kind of at that point, I would say coming down, you know, it'd been a couple hours and we were just sitting in her living room smoking weed, and we pulled some tarot cards, and you know, we just really started to kind of open up about what's been going on with us lately, and just, you know, what we're thinking of taking into this new portal that the eclipse created, and just kind of like setting some attention, just really like getting into ourselves. And you know, I had pulled a tarot card that was very, you know, timely, a lot of meaning for me of what I'm going through, and I was reading it out loud, and there was a piece that really exposed me. It kind of like cut, I felt it when I was reading it out loud to her, like it cut my underbelly, right? And I was like, oh, like this is true.
Yeah.
And I'm saying it out loud, you know, but I'm in a totally safe space. I love her. I trust her immensely. And, you know, that was really powerful to move that. And so I left her house and I was just sitting in my car, just in silence. And it was, you know, beautiful after the eclipse, and it was sunny and it was warm. And I was just breathing, and I was just kind of like feeling into my body. And what just came up like that, you know, was unprompted. It was just like this needed to kind of be expressed, was this message. For me, it was, you don't have to be afraid of yourself.
That makes sense. Yeah.
That like, I won't be too much. Mm-hmm. I won't be too little. Like, I don't have to be afraid of who I am.
Yeah.
Which I think is very similar in line to like, it's okay to like yourself. It's this.
You have always been whole.
Right.
Like none of the things, you know, that you've tried to do or done to feel good about yourself or to stack accomplishments, like those are all things you've always been capable of. Mm-hmm. And that was the takeaway for me, is it's like, I'm not the person I am now because I had those thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the things I've done are because of those thoughts, but I have always been this person.
Right.
I have always been this person that when I set my mind to it, it's going to happen.
Yeah.
And I have always been this person that if it's a hard thing, but I decide to do it, I'll handle it.
Right.
And it took me almost 45 years to like accept that.
Yeah.
And it's not realize, it's accept.
Yeah.
Because
yeah,
you know
right.
lot of things already.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That message that I received of like, you don't have to be afraid of yourself was really like, you know who you are all along. You love who you are. And so like, you don't have to be afraid to show people that. You don't have to be afraid to like show people who you really are.
Yeah.
Which is, I mean, it was a really powerful experience. I came home, I just like laid, I journaled, I just like lit all the candles, had the fire on downstairs, it was dark, and just was like.
Sleep pretty well?
Absorbing. I slept so well.
It's exhausting.
I've just been exhausted this whole week. The eclipse is just really fucked with me in a good positive way, but it is, I'm tired. Like to my bone, I am tired. But I do believe it was that, even just that little bit of psilocybin allowed me to kind of access and
And get out of your own way.
Get out of my own way. Just be more receptive to like what I believe, like the universe, God, source, whatever, you know, is trying to tell me and help me realize.
Yeah.
So it's cool. I love mushrooms.
It's incredibly therapeutic.
Mm-hmm.
And the writing for me is a part of that.
Yeah.
The story that I told in part two that was out today, is a story that I had never told anyone until about 2 months ago, like whole life, not a friend, not my sister, no one. And it's being able to write about these things now and just say, all right, I'm going to put this out there and I'm not going to be embarrassed about it.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to create a scenario where I think people are going to feel a certain type of way. And even if they do, I don't care.
Yeah. Did you truly feel that way? Like, Punat, did you have any lingering feelings of like, oh gosh, or like once it was out there, did you feel like I'm a little exposed?
I wouldn't have put it out.
You wouldn't have put it out.
Like I said, the Substack is pretty new, but there are clearly going to be a couple of different types of articles.
Mm-hmm.
The super emotional, anecdotal, like, let's walk through this and hopefully you can relate.
Yeah.
And hopefully you get some things out of it. And then there's the more technical side. And so it's just, you know, trying to make sure I'm hitting both of those without losing the point.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, I have my Patreon, plug for Patreon, which is similar to the Substack. And obviously it's my verbal, my vocal voice kind of telling my story, telling my stories. But they are like those personal, vulnerable, hey, you know, I acted in ways I didn't like. I moved in ways I didn't like. I've come through it. These are my experiences. And it feels good initially to get it out, right? And I know I do it because I know it's so beneficial for people. And, you know, they give me feedback that this, you know, we're talking about things like, you know, the ending of relationships or cheating or, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. These kind of personal stories that a lot of people experience, but it's not widely talked about.
Yeah.
And so I know I feel good getting it out there, but then if I can easily just start to feel like, oh, I am out there.
Mm-hmm.
Like I put myself out there. I'm like a...
You're vulnerable now.
Vulnerable.
Yeah.
And that has been, you know, it might sound interesting for listeners to hear because I share so much so readily and it does come naturally to me, but there's something about like the very personal stuff then when it's there, you're like...
For me, so I was kind of trying to put out an article every couple of weeks or so. And what I have found is that it is drastically different when I'm writing about myself.
Oh my gosh. I had to take like weeks after. I had a 5-week long Patreon episode that was like chronicling the story, like a very intimate personal story for me. And after I was just like, oh, I need time. Like I just put that out there.
Yeah. I told Sarah I'm excited about having this series, number one, out there, but two, having it done.
Yeah.
Just because, and I don't feel the same feelings now, but writing the articles, you have to put yourself in that mindset.
Yeah.
And that has
been... like relive it.
Yes. That has been a huge like reconnection with that younger person of myself is that I haven't thought about some of these thoughts in a long time and definitely not at this length.
Right.
And so it's been, you know, I'll lose sleep over it. I'll sit there, I'll lay in bed at night and am I saying what I want to say here? Is that conveying the message I want to convey? And as much as I'm excited about this and writing the third part and getting, I'm excited for it to be done.
Yeah.
And I want to get back to some things that aren't quite so heavy.
Right.
At least for an article or two.
You need a break from it.
Yeah.
You need to like let that kind of settle and align and then you can come back to something else. Yeah. Let's talk about the TED Talk.
Yeah. That's actually a perfect segue because the topic that I want to get into with that, and I don't necessarily have a title for it yet, but it's essentially going to be explaining how your health, your fitness, your immune system, your body composition, all of that is a reflection of your body's view of its environment more than anything else.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And
100.
Yeah. And so it's going to try to be explaining how some behavior patterns that we're doing maybe not be serving us. And so let's... it can be a scenario that I can play out for a lot of different people in a lot of different situations. So let's use someone who wants to lose weight.
Yeah.
Again, this is a super easy one.
Yeah.
The number one lever everyone pulls with losing weight is what?
Eating less.
Eat less.
Yes.
Right. And so let's just imagine this imaginary person who's got some weight to lose, mm-hmm. but largely everything else in their life is pretty okay. They're not super stressed out.
Yeah.
And so let's say they cut their calories and they cut it to a number, you know, let's say it's under 2,000, which is mm-hmm. probably lower than almost anyone should be eating. Mm-hmm. But
say that again for the girlies in the back.
Yeah. So that's really kind of what this is going to be about is you may see some temporary results because in the very, very short term, a calorie deficit might work for a little bit.
Yeah.
But eventually, if you stay there too long, let's say now you've been on this diet a month, 2 months, maybe longer, and you've stagnated. Yeah. And the reason for that is your body now interprets this environment as not completely safe. Mm-hmm. You're not eating enough nutrition, and it's happening regularly enough and for long enough that your body has essentially changed its view of the world. Mm-hmm. And its view of the world now includes an aspect where it's not regularly fed enough. Mm-hmm. And so to combat that as a stressor, it downregulates your immune system. It downregulates your metabolism, myriad other things, your hormones, all of these things. Yep. And it downregulates them to a place because it does not want to expend resources maintaining them when a calorie deficit is there and all the time. Mm-hmm. The thing about our body is it's an incredible survival machine. But it has no long-term view. Mm-hmm. It really only cares about surviving until tomorrow and the next day. And so when you cause yourself to live in an environment that you're constantly underfed,
yeah.
the body adapts. That metabolism downregulates, and that becomes your new set point. And so what's the next most common lever everyone pulls?
Work out more.
Double down, right? Work out more, fine.
Yeah.
Same thing. Or double down on, let me eat even less because it worked a little bit the first time. And so you cut your calories more. That might work for a very little bit.
Yeah.
But then that same process happens again.
And how long can you really live off of that? You're going to binge.
Yes.
You're going to, yeah.
Right. And the longer you stay there, the longer that becomes your animal's view of the environment. And it's not safe. And so...
And this works too with like mental safety. Like absolutely. If you're in toxic relationships absolutely. At work, stress is like yep. you get an email and your heart rate skyrockets because you think it. What could it be? Like
yep.
all of this is the same.
They're all factors that influence how
yes.
your animal
yes.
treats its environment or it
yeah.
responds to its environment. And so if we have someone, and I see this a lot as someone who owns a fitness facility, we will get people come in looking for a gym membership because they're desperate. Mm. And they will sit down on the couch and talk to me and say, I am, you know, I'll get an inventory of what they're eating and it's basically nothing. They're mm-hmm. starving themselves, can't make body composition changes and have just been on this loop of misery for mm-hmm. a long time. And what I want to be able to convey to people is, you know, you may go to a gym and you may fix your nutrition and you might fix your sleep, but your body doesn't believe you right away.
Yeah.
Because for so long, months, even mostly years,
yeah.
it's years for most people.
It's years. Yeah.
They have been existing in an environment
if
that
it's
is
not
unsafe.
One stress, it's another.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so your body's not going to believe you after 2 weeks
right.
of working out and eating right. It's like, this is great. I really like this, but I've got years of history
yeah.
and years of background that says this is not going to be the normal thing. And so everybody's different. The period that it takes before your body starts to trust its environment is variable.
Yeah.
And some people it takes months, some people it could take a year.
Yeah.
But in the background, all of these things are improving. You just don't see it yet mm-hmm. because it hasn't shown up on the scale.
Yeah.
It hasn't shown up in your clothes fitting differently.
Right.
And people quit.
Right.
But I just, you know, it'll be much more concise. But the
point
of the TED Talk
kind
is like
this
look,
holistic
yes,
view
exactly.
of health. Yeah.
It can't just be about, well, I got to cut calories or I've got to do this.
It's yeah.
like, you have to understand your body only reacts. So take me for example. I spent the last couple of years training to try to be one of the fittest people in the world over 45.
Yep.
My body's interpretation of its environment is that I am extremely well fed mm-hmm. all the time and have been for years. Mm. I rest I don't drink,
mm-hmm.
and I train super hard.
Yeah.
At least up until, you know, yeah. until I stopped training for this particular goal.
Yeah.
But my body's interpretation of the environment was, is that I am here for performance.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's not, like, it's not a direct result that the working out leads to, you know, A, B, and C. It's that your body adapts to its environment. Mm. And my environment was one that was physically very hard,
mm-hmm.
but was really high on nutrition and recovery and all of these other stressors.
Yeah.
And so as a result, my body adapts and becomes extremely fit.
Yeah.
And whatever environment you're consistently applying to your body and to your existence, your body will adapt to that.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's great. Okay. So what, so you have to write the TED Talk.
Yeah.
Okay. A TED, how long are TED Talks?
Typically anywhere from 10 to 20 minutes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is there going to be like a TED Talk delivery event?
I'm looking into that. Yeah. I'm looking into that now.
Okay.
They do travel. It's kind of a, you know, a what's the word I'm looking for? A tour, if you will.
A tour.
Yeah. And so I will be, I'm hoping to give this seminar at Finley Movement a couple of times
in the
coming
practice.
Months
yeah.
To sharpen it, tighten it, and get some feedback on it.
Yeah.
And then hopefully try to push those buttons.
That's amazing.
Yeah, I will probably reach out to you and try to get you in to come down to Finley Movement when
Fuck
I do
yeah.
it.
Fuck yeah, I would love to. Okay, Patrick, I want to wrap up by asking one of my new favorite questions to ask people.
Let's do it.
Which is, what do you do for fun?
Ooh.
Fun? I love having fun.
Yeah. So this isn't going to be super exciting.
No, it's just what you find fun. I love to hear other people's idea of fun because everyone has a different idea. And I think we could all use a little more fun in our lives. And so maybe people can get some inspiration or say, oh, I never thought that might be fun to me too.
Mm,
I'm just on a mission to make everyone more fun.
I'm really into golf.
Great. That's so fun. So many people think that's fun. I don't, but I love that for you.
Yeah. I'm a person who always has something to pursue.
Yeah.
There has to have something to pursue,
right.
something that's challenging. And it's kind of part of the reason why I started working out the way I do. There's
yeah.
so many aspects to it that you never get bored.
Right.
Golf's kind of that way too. There's 27 yes. different things you got to be good at.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but I have been rucking. I started a ruck club at the gym a little while ago.
Okay.
Where you just throw a pack on your back anywhere from 25 to 40 pounds and we go walk in the woods or on.
I
for
really
want
to do this.
We're going Saturday.
I
don't have to go this time.
You
don't have to go this time. I know you're traveling.
I will not. Yeah, I'll be until May. I'm spoken for until May,
cool.
but I really want to do this.
100%. Yeah, I'll let you know. Yeah, we once a month at least, and it's anywhere from 5 to 15 people. We'll just go to one of the local parks.
Okay, do I need to get like a vest or something?
So it's backpack.
Okay.
Yeah, and you can just throw anything in it you want.
Just take my regular old backpack?
So, yeah, so.
Or is it a specific kind?
There
Can
is
I spend
a
money on
yeah,
this hobby?
There
yeah.
If you're going to do it a ton, you
okay.
would probably want to spend money.
Okay.
I would recommend a Go Ruck bag.
Okay,
they're
I
kind
can
of
do that.
They're kind of the top end of it, and they last forever.
I think I would really like this. I love activity that makes me feel like a farm animal, like a
I
pack
get it.
Mule.
I get it.
You know, like
yeah.
pushing, dragging sleds. Like put me on that grind all day.
It is a perfect opportunity to just go out,
put your head
into
down,
the woods, and walk. And there's a little bit of discomfort.
Yeah.
There's some great conversation along the way.
Yeah.
I generally smoke a little weed while we go. It is just an absolute great time.
I want to do this.
You're in. Let's do it.
Okay. Well, you got to send me the,
I will.
Okay. So golf, rucking, what else fun? Those are really, those are
riding
two,
has been a lot of fun.
Riding.
Yeah.
Writing. I thought you said riding. I was like, do you have a motorcycle?
No, I had one of those when I was younger and realized that I was lucky to survive it as long as I had it. And so that fleeting relationship is gone.
Yeah. Okay. I'm like kind of into motorcycles all of a sudden.
Why wouldn't you be? They're awesome.
Yeah, why wouldn't
but,
you?
Yeah.
I mean, just to like sit on the back of one. I don't think I want to drive one. Yeah. But okay. So riding's fun. No, those are all really great things.
Yeah.
Anything else that's so fun that comes to mind?
Well, we have a new puppy.
Oh, yeah.
He's all right.
That's fun. That's really fun. My sister just got a new puppy. She got a chug, a chihuahua, and a pug. It's like
that's amazing.
It's like the size of a squirrel right now, but she's so cute. She just wants to eat your hair, your clothes. Like she's just like jumping everywhere. It's very fun. So yeah. looking for fun, get a puppy. It's also a lot of work.
Yeah, no, actually, it's Sarah's dog.
Yeah. Like, it's just fun for me.
I was like, it's kind of fun because yeah. I don't have too much to do with it.
No, that's good. Well, I think we should ask you the question again, just to round out the experience, the big question of the show. What does being fit mean to you?
My answer is different now than it used to be.
I would expect it to be.
I think you asked me this question before, and I would have spouted off something about strong and
fast.
Yeah, and having big mobile, lungs, et cetera.
Yeah.
But
having big lungs.
Big lungs. How well do you fit with your environment? How well do you fit in the places you're putting yourself every day, the people you're hanging out with, the activities you're doing? Do you fit?
Yeah. Is it a cozy, welcoming, held fit? Is it a rigid, can't get in, squeezed fit?
And
is
if
it
you're
a jagged fit?
Yeah. And if you're fit, life can be good.
Yeah. Totally. Amazing. Well, thank you so much.
Thanks,
Where
Chrissy.
Can people follow all you've got going on? How do they get the articles, all that?
Yeah. So Substack.com/preppycaveman.
Mm-hmm.
I think if you just Google Substack or search on Substack for Preppy Caveman.
It's in your Instagram bio?
It is in my Instagram bio. Yes, thank you. And that is Preppy_Caveman, Patrick Herringer on Instagram. FindleyMovement.com is the website for the gym, if you heard anything there that sounded good to you. And I think that's about it.
Yeah. All right. Perfect. Well, thank you so much.
Appreciate it, Chrissy.
Yeah, thanks a lot. Thanks for listening. Love you.
Thank you so much for listening. Make sure you're following me on Instagram at Chrissy Girlie, KRISSYGIRLIE, and at What The Fit Podcast. If you're loving What The Fit, please help spread the word. Send it to a friend, share it to your story, and if you are looking for even more exclusive content, become a Patreon member. You can find it at patreon.com/whatthefitpodcast. Love ya.